Hello and welcome to the Demystifying Media podcast. I'm Damien Radcliffe, the Carolyn S. Chambers Professor of Journalism at the University of Oregon, and today we're going to be talking about social responsibility reporting and constructive journalism. Joining me today to discuss these topics is Dr. Karen McIntyre from Virginia Commonwealth University. Karen is an assistant professor of multimedia journalism who received her PhD from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, where her dissertation explored the effects of positive emotions and solution information in news stories. And she may also be the first person we've had on the podcast who wrote their master's thesis on balloon fetishism, a topic that Professor McIntyre explored even while she was a student at Berkeley. Karen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
We may or may not dive into balloon fetishism at a later point, but I thought it was too good a detail on your resume to leave off.
Yes, you did your homework, and I'm happy to talk about it.
Okay. Well, let's park that for now and perhaps just start with constructive journalism, which I think is a really kind of interesting concept, and that's something that you're specializing in and focusing a lot of your research on. So for the benefit of our listeners, can you explain what you mean by that label and indeed kind of how you discovered constructive journalism in the first instance?
Sure. So what I mean by that label is not necessarily a simple question, because that's what, you know, myself and many others are spending their research doing, is trying to define what it is.
And but, definitions are hard, right?
Yeah. So simply put, I would say, you know, for in layman's terms, constructive journalism is a way to practice reporting that's more productive and more solution focused, more forward looking than a lot of the mainstream media is today. So a lot of media today is really focused on conflict and negativity, and it's absolutely necessary that journalists report, you know, inherently negative information and conflict, but sometimes that gets overdone, and there are ways to practice reporting that are more constructive. And so kind of simply put, that's how I would put it. When I dig in more from a research mind, more technically, I've defined constructive journalism as a form of journalism that involves taking techniques from the field of positive psychology and applying it to the news process, you know, in the aim of making news stories that are more productive, more solution focused, and ultimately contributing to society's well-being, at the same time holding true to journalism's core functions.
And if I remember rightly, your bachelor's was in psychology in the first instance?
I minored in psychology. Right. My bachelor's was in journalism.
Right. Yeah. So, but was the kind of conflation of the two, was that how you kind of first got introduced to the opportunity to blend these different philosophies and approaches in a complementary manner?
Yeah, it definitely contributed. So my first entry into this was when I was a PhD student at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and I was working as a research assistant, and the professor I was working for asked me to compile a list of good news websites, like positive news websites. And I had never heard of this before. I didn't realize that existed, that there were news websites that only published positive news. And when I say positive news, it's like, oh, you know, fireman saves cat from tree kind of positive news. And so I thought it was entertaining, you know, kind of silly, kind of interesting, but lacking like the rigor of traditional journalism. And so from doing that work, I just found through an internet search constructive journalism and an article written by Catherine Gildensted, who's a leader in constructive journalism in Denmark. And so constructive journalism seemed to kind of take elements of both traditional journalism, which I was passionate about, and some of these more positive elements. And so that's how I originally found out about it. And I thought it was a good topic for me because I like journalism, I like psychology, and I think I'm an optimist. And this kind of included all of that.
Well, and we need optimism in this current climate, for sure. Is there a risk that constructive journalism is perceived as kind of frivolous and kind of it's those kind of end of the news type stories, like the kind of cat stuck up tree rescued by fireman type thing, whereas rather than perhaps a sort of function of journalism or a style of reporting that kind of hits the kind of traditional fourth estate role that a lot of journalists are extremely passionate about?
Yes, yeah, certainly, but that's a misconception. So I think initially when people hear the term constructive journalism or solutions journalism, that's what they think, that it's more of this positive news. And then they are, you know, hesitant or skeptical, understandably. I mean, I was a traditionally trained journalist and value the, you know, the watchdog function of the press. So I agree. I totally understand and can see that. But the people who think that just don't know what constructive journalism is. And once they take the time to learn what it is and understand it, then I don't think I've encountered anyone who then hasn't become, you know, at least accepting and usually supportive of it.
And are there particular examples of constructive journalism in practice that you would want to highlight or share that really kind of exemplify the potential for this approach?
Sure. So the way I view it, constructive journalism is an umbrella term, and there are different ways that you can practice more constructive reporting. So, for example, solutions journalism would be one type of style of constructive journalism. And there are other types. So an example, so solutions journalism is when journalists report on how people are responding to social problems. So an example might be an article, you know, instead of reporting the story about Ebola, which, you know, whenever there's an Ebola outbreak, of course, that's in the news all the time. And everybody's heard that story. But what's not in the news all the time is, you know, for example, what Nigeria did to eradicate Ebola. And, you know, that's new and interesting. Not everybody knows that story. And it's taking this solution-oriented approach. And I think that's more engaging. It's also rigorous, but it also allows audiences to feel more hopeful, which is important because news audiences today are feeling quite depressed when they're reading the news and disengaged. And of course, journalists don't want to disengage their audiences. We want to engage them.
And so is this one of the ways in which you would try to kind of advocate and sort of champion for either this type of journalism or rather kind of including it as part of the story mix, of kind of recognizing that actually we need a broad range of different styles? News fatigue is a very real consideration even among dedicated news consumers, and that perhaps we need to start communicating differently with our audiences if we want to retain their attention and hopefully from that develop a business model that is sustainable and allows longevity for reporting.
Yes, absolutely. So I think you're right. You know, this is one, tool in the toolbox, so to speak. And it's not appropriate for every type of reporting. For example, solutions journalism is not an approach I would take when I'm reporting breaking news. I think it lends itself to more reporting where you can take your time and investigate. You know, it's quite similar to investigative journalism in a lot of ways. And so you're right that it's one approach and it's desperately needed because the approach that a lot of news reporters are taking right now, again, is turning audiences away. One survey found that people were decreasing the amount of TV news they are watching. And the number one reasons they were doing that is because the news was too negative, too often about crime, and too seldom reported any kind of solutions. So, you know, we're turning audiences away. And so this is one way to bring audiences back. And that's connected too to a hopefully successful financial business model.
And when you talk about this with newsrooms and with journalism students, what's typically the response to some of these ideas? Because we can be kind of quite set in our ways. We can be quite a sort of cynical bunch at times and perhaps concerned about doing things differently and whether that means that some of our kind of traditional journalistic principles risk being let go or kind of loosened. And you've said, you know, that's clearly not the case. But can you just say a little bit about kind of culture change and how you might try and encourage people to embrace this type of journalism?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you asked, what's the conversation like with newsrooms and with students? So totally different in those two groups. So with newsrooms, definitely see some of the cynicism and the skepticism. And it's, again, completely understandable. I mean, it's ingrained in journalists that negativity equals news. You know, when you look at news values in a journalism 101 textbook, you know, when it's telling you what makes something newsworthy, it'll straight up say bad news makes something newsworthy. Right. And so it's it goes against the journalist's core to think in terms of, oh, actually, you know, a solution could be newsworthy. And conflict is a news value that's, again, ingrained in journalists. So yes, when journalists learn about that, I think some of them are hesitant. But again, when you talk about it more in depth, then journalists realize that when you're reporting constructively, you still are including, you know, those elements. Like when I'm reporting a solutions journalism story on, let's say, the problem of homelessness, I'm still documenting all of the details about the problem of homelessness. So you're still doing that. You're then just taking an extra step, pushing it forward to then go on and talk about, okay, so now we know the problem, what are people doing about it? And that's what makes it more of a solution-focused story. So a more nuanced story showing
yes, that actually this is a more complex issue than perhaps often our coverage has suggested.
Right, and I don't know if you're familiar with Amanda Ripley's Complicating the Narratives, but she talks about how, yes, we need to complicate the issues or make them more complex, because as journalists, we tend to make stories simple, and it makes sense. You know, we want to make it so it's very understandable to audiences, but at the same time, you know, are we dumbing it down too much and then oversimplifying issues? And actually, we should have more faith in our audiences that they can understand and want to hear the more complex, the more nuanced, the more real issue. So that's with newsrooms.
And then students, you said, are completely different.
Students are completely different. I have found that students, and not just my own at Virginia Commonwealth University, but in several places where I've lectured on this topic in and outside of the U.S., students seem to be really receptive. They seem to really like it. And I think part of that is maybe that millennials, or that kind of the younger age group today, are really social justice oriented, and they really, they care about human rights. They care about social justice. And this type of reporting, I think, is a natural fit with that. And so I find that students are really excited when they learn about it, and it makes them feel like their work has more meaning. And some of my graduate students in particular have found that when they've approached stories with a solution-oriented mindset, that their sources are, you know, happier to talk to them, that they build better relationships with them, and end up getting a more successful story.
And I guess also in turn, those students, when they graduate, then become the champions, the catalysts for potentially behavioral change and doing things differently in the newsrooms where they end up.
Exactly. I think key to really fully implementing solution or constructive journalism is having the leadership on board. You know, the managing editors and even publishers of newsrooms have to be supportive of it. And that's exactly my thought process, is if we teach this in schools, then soon enough, this, who are our students now, will soon become the editors of these newsrooms and then help it really take off.
So you're going to be meeting with students whilst you're here. What are some of the key messages you're going to want them to leave with from your talks with them?
So I want to talk to them about, again, how I define or conceptualize constructive journalism and solutions journalism. There are a lot of different terms thrown out there and used by different people in different ways. And so a lot of my work is trying to parse that out. And so we have, you know, a clear understanding, which is important both in practice and so that we can study these topics in from a research lens. So I want to talk to them about what I think it is. And then I want to focus a lot of my talk on what research has been done on these topics. You know, what have we found? What do we know about the effects of solutions journalism? What do we not know? You know, these are well-meaning ideas, but what's the actual outcomes of them?
And can you give us some of the highlights of that? I don't want to spoil the talk, which will also be available for people to listen to, but what have been some of the effects that you've seen?
Mm-hmm. So one of the consistent effects that I think has shown up, and every solutions or constructive experiment that I've conducted or read about is that it tends to leave audiences feeling more positive. And that may sound kind of like, well, duh, and also so, but that's actually really important because there, when you feel more positive, that results in all kinds of other positive actions. So there's a, without getting too technical, there's a theory called the broaden and build theory of positive emotions. And it talks about, you know, when we experience positive emotions, it does more than just make us feel happy in a fleeting moment, but it actually builds these cognitive and social and even physical resources that we then can use later. And I'll give you an example of the implications of this. So I worked with Google on developing a feature for the Google Assistant. So the Google Assistant's like Siri or Alexa. And so this feature, you say, hey, Google, tell me something good. And then the Google Assistant summarizes a solutions journalism story for you. So I did an experiment where we had people use this Google feature over a course of 2 weeks. And at the end, we found that the people who used the Google feature were more likely to feel positive when after reading or consuming traditional news, not the solution stories they got from the feature, but just regular news that they would ordinarily read. And that's really important because it shows that if you incorporate a little solutions journalism into your daily news diet, that that can mitigate some of the negative effects that the more traditional, more negative news has. And so that's an example of how when we feel these more positive emotions, it can have, you know, effects that go beyond just feeling happy in the moment.
And so, for example, for kind of local outlets, does that mean potentially that news consumers might feel more invested in their community, that they actually have more of a sense not only of what's going on, but also the kind of feelings of helplessness that people often kind of express as one of the reasons for news avoidance or news fatigue is perhaps mitigated to some extent?
Yeah, absolutely. So the research is showing people are feeling more positive. And then also that's translating to people in general are feeling a bigger sense of self-efficacy, that they can do something themselves to help contribute to a problem. Or contribute to a solution to a problem. And people are reporting, you know, they're feeling like a more positive experience with the news story and toward the news organization. And all of that, you know, just extends to a better relationship with a news organization and its community, which then hopefully spreads into more money.
And you've touched on, or you mentioned you're going to talk about some of the research that's taking place in this space. Has there been a lot of research in this environment? Is this an area where we're seeing kind of more interest given the kind of wider geopolitical and journalistic climate?
So there's been a growing number of research studies in this area lately, and I'd say it's still in its infancy. So when I started researching this topic about 5 years ago, I was definitely among the first. I think I was the first, along with my co-author, to introduce the term constructive journalism to the academic literature. So that was 5 years ago. Now there are dozens of studies that you know, have been published in academic journals on this topic, and I can feel the momentum growing. You know, now there are full conferences dedicated to this subject. There are special issues of journals dedicated to the subject. So it's definitely a growing field, but there's a lot more to do.
What are some of the gaps that you see, or some of the things that you're excited about exploring in the near term?
Yeah, so one thing is that we've found a connection between specifically solution-oriented stories and people's behavioral intentions. So when they read a solution story compared to a conflict-focused story, they say, oh yeah, I'd be more likely to like that on Facebook, or I'd be more likely to comment or share or donate money to this cause. But we haven't seen consistent results in their actual behaviors. Maybe they say, oh yeah, I'd be more likely to donate to that cause, but they're not actually donating money to that cause. So I think more work needs to be done on, you know, what is it that kind of translates from a behavioral intention to actually changing someone's behavior. So that's an area that I want to continue to look into. Also, I think that constructive journalism is global, and it means different things in different countries, especially in different countries with non-democratic, you know, government systems. And so one area that I'm particularly interested in is what this means in those countries. And so I want to continue to look into that.
And you touch on some of that in a book that you're co-authoring with Nicole Darman here from the, or co-editing, I should say, with Nicole Darman from the University of Oregon.
A little bit. We talk about constructive journalism globally in general in that book. We don't take a specific deep dive into what it means in non-democratic countries. So that's more other work that I'm planning on doing. I've done some research in East Africa and Rwanda, Uganda, and Kenya, and some work in China. And, you know, there's concern that in those countries that constructive journalism could be a word that they're using as positive news that could be just interpreted as propaganda. And, you know, then where a government system could encourage propaganda under the guise of, oh, it's constructive journalism. So I think that's something where I'm particularly interested in learning more about what it means in different countries, and not with the framework of, well, the way we do it here is the best, but looking at the different sociopolitical contexts in these different countries and seeing, you know, what works for them. How do journalists view their roles in non-democratic countries, and what is the type of journalism that, you know, that's working best for them?
And in turn, are there lessons that we can potentially learn from those different markets that we can apply to kind of a more Western journalistic environment?
I think so. You know, I spent a academic year living in Rwanda, and I studied how they incorporate constructive journalism into their reporting, and really have found that that style of journalism has really helped their country to recover from the genocide they experienced in 1994. So I think that, you know, during that process, I felt that sure, the U.S. could take some examples from them, and we could use this style of reporting just to, you know, not to recover from a civil war, but to just increase societal well-being, to create a healthier public climate, and really to unify people at a time when there is, you know, a lack of unification, especially politically.
And what role do platforms potentially play in that space? So you touched on some work that you've done with Google. Are other platforms also interested in this space in terms of how some of these ideas play into algorithms and news feeds and the kind of material that gets surfaces that people bump into or seek out on different platforms?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's an area that needs more research. Not much has been done there. It's funny, just yesterday on the plane ride over, I was reviewing an article about looking at pairing solutions journalism stories with ads that are relevant to the story. So if the story is about, you know, solutions journalism story about human trafficking, then if you have an ad that's, you know, encouraging people to, I don't know, buy clothes from this company who then will donate some of the proceeds to help stop human trafficking, you know, what happens in that situation? And so I think that, yeah, more work needs to be done in terms of what are the different technical capabilities. You know, now there are stories that are just generated automatically. You know, how can we create algorithms that can implement solutions journalism techniques and publish them automatically? I don't know. That's a wide open field. And so I think it'll be something to learn going forward.
Yeah. And in turn, I guess also the different and new delivery mechanisms for news. So you've kind of, you mentioned voice assistants as one example, and there will be other mechanisms that will also be developing too.
Yeah, definitely.
So you have this book that I've kind of alluded to kind of coming out soon. When can we expect that to drop?
Later this year.
So the $64,000 academic publishing question.
Yes, I think So we are getting the book to the publisher at the beginning of April, and it will not be out in time for the AEJMC conference in August, so hopefully shortly after that.
And very briefly, what can we expect from the book?
So the book looks at different forms of social responsibility reporting. So I mentioned that there are lots of different terms that different people are using. And so in the book, it's an edited volume where we have 8 chapters each looking at a different form of socially responsible journalism. So, for example, one chapter will examine constructive journalism, one solutions journalism, but another look at peace journalism, another looking at explanatory journalism, participatory journalism. So we have these different chapters that each one dives into one of these approaches to learn more about it, how they're similar, how they're distinct. That's what Nicole and I will really discuss in the conclusion.
And how can newsrooms get their hands on that book and apply some of those principles and some of those lessons? Is there a challenge sometimes that we kind of have almost 2 different conversations that are going on? You highlighted, like, here's the conversations between newsrooms and my students. Do we see the same thing between the academy and newsrooms? Is there a risk of that?
Yeah, for sure. But I think, you know, people are constantly trying to bridge the gap between academy and newsrooms. You know, for example, I'm helping organize a conference in London in June that, you know, is specifically focused on connecting practicing journalists with journalism researchers. And, you know, there are always efforts to do that. The Shorenstein Center's journalist resource, you know, is constantly working to do that. So there are good efforts. I think our book specifically will probably apply more to researchers than to practitioners, but we are trying to craft it in a way so it would be interesting and engaging to anyone who's interested in journalism. But I think it'll particularly be a valuable resource probably for graduate courses in journalism. And hopefully just intellectuals who are interested in the subject.
Great. And obviously, this is a huge undertaking, putting together something like that. So when you come up for air after it's been submitted to the publishers, what's next on your radar?
Well,
you've already given me a big wish list of all these different types of research you want to do, and you have this conference in London, and I know you like to travel and sometimes blend the two.
Yeah, so I actually am already working on a proposal for another book, but this one is not so related to constructive journalism. It's about press freedom and the role of media in development in East Africa. So that's a big thing on my plate. More related to constructive journalism, there are always, you know, a dozen research studies that I'm working on. Just conducted a survey actually in Rwanda, Uganda, and Kenya of journalists in those 3 countries and asked them, you know, have you heard of solutions and constructive journalism? What does it mean to you? Is it practiced in your country? So again, pushing that work forward about what these fields mean in different countries, and specifically countries with that are not full-fledged democracies.
And so people should follow you on Twitter, keep an eye out on your website for
Please.
All of these things.
Of course, absolutely. It's kmcintyre3 is my Twitter handle.
Excellent. We'll add that to the show notes as well. So I hope you've enjoyed this discussion today. So do keep an eye out for the extended talk that we've referenced from Karen on social responsibility reporting, which you'll be able to find wherever you found this podcast. And of course, we'll link to it from our website, which is demystifying.uoregon.edu. In the meantime, it just remains for me to thank my guest today, Karen McIntyre. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Damian. Until next time. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed this podcast, why not check out another from the University of Oregon School of Journalism and Communication? The Listeners Podcast is a show about the craft and power of listening. We talk with media and communication experts, thought leaders, doers and innovators whose ideas can amplify the quality of our dialogue and interactions. Subscribe to the show anywhere where you find your other favourite podcasts and visit listenerspodcast.com to go deeper with each of our episode's show notes. Thanks for listening.